Our readings on this third Sunday in Lent speak with urgency about the need to respond and change when the need and time arises. That urgency is a good word in Lent. Now's the time to change. Now's the time for honest self-examination, to listen to God. This is the moment to begin again and to come home. Luke 13 begins, though, not with self-examination and reflection, but with the kind of things that distract us from it on a daily basis. Salacious headlines about how awful other people are. It's much easier territory for most of us to inhabit. In this story, there are two tragedies ripped from the headlines, and one awful story, the ruler murdered pilgrims from Galilee who had come to the temple. In the other story, in what appears to be an accident, a tower collapsed on a group of people and killed them. How to make sense of these things, they wondered, and their instinct is to chatter. These people, in some way, got what they deserved. Sin has consequences one way or the other. If bad things happen to them, they probably deserved it. You may or may not be surprised that Jesus has no time for this kind of harsh theological arithmetic. He has no time for the logic that says good things always happen to good people and bad things invariably happen to bad people. Sometimes, like Pilate, rulers have evil intentions and do bad things to individuals and to nations. Sometimes they do it against religion, sometimes they do it in the name of religion. But no matter, most of the time, when powerful men decide to use their power without humility or decency, people get hurt, including lots of innocent people. And sometimes, like the Tower of Siloam, through no one's fault, towers fall, tornadoes hit, earthquakes shake the ground, and bad things happen for seemingly no reason at all. Life has tragedies and suffering, and it doesn't mean that they deserved it more than you do, says the one who's heading to the cross. He knows all too well. Now, I don't think the point here is to use tragedies to scare people. It's to point out that all of our lives are contingent on many things, some of which are out of our control. The use and misuse of power by those who have and exercise power over our lives, the vagaries of life's fortunes and misfortunes, and our own spiritual vitality. And that's what Jesus wants them, and suppose us, in this passage, to be concerned about. Unless you repent, he says, you'll perish like they did. It's a very Lenten kind of thing to say. In a very Lenten way, Jesus turns our attention back inward. Not in the sense of only worry about yourselves, but in the sense of every once in a while, there comes a moment to look into the mirror of the soul and see what you see there. In doing this, Jesus invites us to change our heart, to make a radical about faith on the path of our lives, and confront our compromises with evil and our hypocrisy. I think all of us, nearly all of us, has a little hypocrisy, in order to decidedly take up the path of the gospel. But even again, there is the temptation to justify ourselves. What should we convert from? Aren't we basically good people? How many times have we thought this? But I'm a good man, I'm a good woman. Isn't that true? Am I not a believer and even quite a church goer? And we believe that this way we are justified. This morning in Sunday school, I heard Christina tell about when she was a child that she got this little pen in the second grade that says, I go to big church, like with a heart on it. And I love that idea. She said, shouldn't we have those? And I thought, yes, we should have those. So I started looking it up. I go to big church pen. And I couldn't find them, but what did pop up was another kind of pen that said, it was a used pen from a long time ago, I guess. It said, I go to Sunday school, do you? Like, who puts that on their shirt? I'm going to order a bunch of them. I feel like that's the spirit that we want to embody. This being the time of Lent, this is a good time. Any time's a good time. To take a closer look at ourselves and to make changes we need to make. There's a note of urgency here that's important for us to hear and take in. What needs to change in our lives and what needs to change now? Like a river canyon, life's formation is a conspiracy of the slow disciplines that work on us over time and dramatic transformations that sweep through us in a moment like a flood. And some of them we welcome. We want them and need them. In the center of the parable, Jesus tells there's an unfruitful tree. The landowner wants to cut it down. He says, it's a waste of soil. Can you imagine a harsher judgment or a more devastating middle school taunt in an agrarian age? You're nothing but a waste of soil. If there's any part of us that's actually worthy of such judgment, the time's come to deal with it. Either cut it out or redeem it. The landowner wants to cut it down. The gardener wants to work the soil for another year and give him and it another opportunity. Give us more time. Give us a year to work the soil and produce fruit. And now we see there's urgency for change. And there's patience for the work. There's urgency and patience. We can be affected by the power of both in the story if the patience of God leads us to have a little holy impatience with ourselves. God's grace allows me to live another day. Let me use this day for good. Let me change habits that are not bearing fruit. Let me begin habits that can bear fruit. Let me change what needs to be changed. This is the spiritual springboard Lent and Jesus set right at our feet. These are questions we're prompted to ask when we're honest with ourselves. In the words of the ancient desert fathers and mothers, this is the first step of discipleship, what they called purgation. Purgation, purify your heart. Examine yourself, they invited Christians. Examine every part of your life and give it all to God. I like the gardening version of this spiritual act. Pay attention. Work the soil. Let it breathe. Add some fertilizer. Be a little patient and go get to good work in God's grace. We begin Lent by saying, you are dust, and to dust you shall return. And here we remember that God can do amazing things with a little dust and a little dirt, like make a human and like remake one too. A little patient urgency is what it seems we need. This same urgent impatience is also in our Isaiah reading. If Luke's message is, where you are fruitless, tend the soil, Isaiah's image is, you've gotten too comfortable with where you don't belong. It's time to go home. Seek the Lord where he may be found. The The time's come for a change, says Isaiah. God's grace is opening a door for you, but it won't stay open. I think a little context will make this come alive for you in a better way. Isaiah 55 is the final chapter in a section from 40 to 55 addressed to exiles in Babylon who are promised a return home to Israel. They've been there for 70 years, and now it's time to go home and rebuild their lives and their nation. And for many of them, this is the good news they've been waiting for. Everyone's favorite part of Isaiah are from this section, 40 to 55. Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that her warfare is ended, her iniquity is pardoned, and that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. A voice is crying in the wilderness, make straight a highway for our God in the wilderness, prepare a way for the Lord. For many of them, this was the news they had waited patiently for, and now it's time to go home. The door which was closed shut to them is now wide open, but it will not swing wide open forever. There's patience and there's urgency. Patience. Think of a little girl perched on a ledge trying to get up the courage to jump into her daddy's outstretched arms. He keeps assuring her, "You've got this, honey. Trust me. I know it looks like a long way, but you can do it. I will catch you." Do you remember the flutter in the tummy of trying to make your legs and your feet jump when they refuse to obey your commands to them? The daddy has patience for her because he understands and wants to reassure her of his trustworthiness. Urgency. Now think of the same story. She's on the ledge. Her knees are bent. She just can't move. He's encouraging her to jump into my arms. But now, the house is burning behind her. Trust me, honey. I know it's a long way, but you can do it. I will catch you. The daddy has urgency. The girl has fear, but it's time to act. That's Israel in Isaiah 55. It's time to go. For Israel in exile, the moment has come, but it will pass, and those who stay behind will lose their identity, their souls. It's hard to imagine it was even much of a choice, but it was. Some of them were either afraid to leave what they'd become comfortable with or didn't want to be a part of the hard work of going home and rebuilding, or they just made peace with empire life. This is the most nefarious temptation. The empire takes you and then trains you to accept the stale crumbs it gives you in return for your soul and your community. Empires colonize nations, and then they colonize spirits. And so the invitation, exiles, come home. Come to the waters that flow and so do milk for babies and wine for adults. Come to a feast that's set for all of you. Why do you spend your life, your one precious life, on all the things that don't matter? For all that which is not bread and which does not satisfy, when if you will trust me and follow me, I'll lead you to a feast and into my covenantal love. I think I'm okay just staying here a little longer. There were exiles who'd so settled in and settled for Babylon that they'd forgotten their true home and forgotten their true God. Babylon has a way of doing that. Change is hard, especially when you grow comfortable and even lazy where you are. Even if where you are isn't great, and you're not happy, and you're not fulfilled, and you're not serving anyone from any good fruit of the tree of your life, still, even then, change is hard. We tend to like the familiar and the comfortable. The motto of Babylon is, hey, it may not be so great, but it works okay for me now. You weren't meant to live like that. You weren't meant to live like that. Holy urgency. The parable makes it plain. A tree that bears no fruit is a waste of soil. Holy patience. Give it a little more time. Give me a little more time for the good work. I know what to do now. Holy urgency. Come home. It's time to come home. Holy patience. The mercy of God leaves us this day as time for conversion. The patience of God prompts the urgency of conversion. The possibility of conversion is not unlimited. It's necessary to seize it immediately. Otherwise, it might be lost forever. In this Lent, we can consider, what do I have to do now to draw nearer to the Lord, to cut out those things that are not good, to leave behind the things I cling to for security that are in fact killing me? What must I do before this mercy of God who awaits me and who forgives? What must I do? We can have great trust in God's mercy, but without abusing it. We must not justify spiritual laziness, but increase our commitment to respond promptly to this mercy with heartfelt sincerity. We all need to take a step forward. And God's patience and God's mercy accompanies us in the urgent task of our lives. Despite the barrenness that marks our lives at times, God is patient and offers us the possibility to change and to make progress toward the transformation we need. And this invitation is set before us today.